Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, this is World Formzan Fighting Champion John Chung, and you're listening to the AMAA Legends and Pioneers Radio Blog Show with Professor Gary Lee and the Sport Karate Museum Archives, connecting the history one warrior at a time. Enjoy.
Aloha, everybody, and welcome to the AMA Masters Radio Box Show. We're here for you. Parts unknown. Our second year. Talking in phrases, aren't I? I'm not talking in sentences. I guess I'm just excited about tonight's show. I got an old friend I'm going to be interviewing tonight. And I say old friend, someone from Texas. And I always love interviewing my friends from Texas. And I'm going to bring you on in just a few minutes. But, you know, again, we thank you for letting us be in your home tonight on a Tuesday night. We hope that you're safe and secure. And you've had a great day and a productive day. You know, this show has got a heart. And the heart is the Sport Karate Museum. And also the Who's Who in the martial arts book that we put together. And actually it started in the 80s with a gentleman called Dan Wallendorf and Dale Brooks, and their vision was to go around to different parts of the country, all 50 states, in fact, to get representation of martial arts in America, not for a, you know, an ego type thing, but just to kind of tell the stories of people. Well, we lost one of those gentlemen, and one of their students, my producer, Hachi Jesse Bowen, is kind of taking it over, and he's taking it to a different level with the Who's Who in the martial arts. It's based on a banquet every year. In fact, this year is going to be August 3rd, 4th, and 5th. I'll be featuring people like Dan the Beast Severin, UFC champion, the incredible Linda Denley, queen of the cinema, Miss Cynthia Rothrock, world's form champion, Mr. John Chung, and my favorite samurai, Mr. Dana Abbott. And they'll be featured there with seminars and workshops throughout the weekend of August 3rd, 4th, and 5th. In Washington, D.C. at the beautiful Gaylord National Hotel. For more information, you can contact Hansi Jesse Bowen on Facebook. And remember, to get the book, to order the book, you can go to Barnes & Noble, or Friends at Century Martial Arts. Of course, you can just go to Amazon.com and just type it in, Who's in the Martial Arts, and check it out. We'd like to hear from you. Our tonight's guest is someone that goes back few years in Texas, that he actually was part of the management of an organization called the AOK, the Amateur Organization of Karate. But, you know, even though he was part of that management group in those years, I know this gentleman is a fighter. You know, I've been in Texas since 1979, and I've watched him grow into one of the great fighters of Texas. And I'm talking about Mr. Joe Gillen from Austin, Texas. He's got a really, really incredible story, and just kind of the reason that I can kind of bring him into it, we had a 25th Living Legends roast of Mr. George Minshew. But the highlight of it, we tested Mr. Ishmael Robles, world champion Ishmael Robles already, and world champion Troy Dorsey and Mr. Jimmy Tavares for their ninth degree black belt. And Mr. Gillum was a sparring partner for this gentleman. Pretty amazing considering that I think 2 years ago, or maybe less than that, he had open heart surgery. So we'll be talking about this as we go on too. But right now, I'd like to bring him on, Mr. Joe Gillum. Are you there, sir?
I'm doing well. How are you doing, Mr. Lee?
Hey, Joe. Hey, welcome to the show. Parts unknown, man. You're get ready to get answer all the hard questions, huh?
Absolutely. Let's do it.
Well, cool. Well, first of all, share with me how you got started in martial arts and who influenced you first and, you know, what was your first beginnings?
Well, this is in 1981. My younger brothers, Jack and Kim Gillum, started karate. I got in a little while after them, and that inspired me because I didn't want my little brother beating me up any time. I was 21 years old. I got started kind of late in the game with some of the kids that fought against all the time, but ended up getting my black belt in 1985, and, you know, she started from there. I mean, you know, it's competing in some tournaments at a young age, but I mean, starting out and stuff, didn't do too well until I started, you know, watching a little, going to some Ray McCallum seminars here in Austin. Wherever he was at, I went to one of his seminars, and I became a better fighter for that. Of course, going ringside and watching Tim Kirby and some of the other guys, champions, went all the time, try to copy their success as much as I could.
So you had heroes in Texas that you kind of followed through seminars and watching them kind of set the path a little bit after the original guys had started. But let me ask you a question. Now, when did you make black belt? What year?
It was 1985, late 1985.
1985, okay. Wow, I feel old. How old are you, Joe? May I ask?
I'm 58 years old.
How old are you? 58, wow. You look good a couple months ago back there fighting. What was that? Before we go into a little more in-depth about your history, what was it like fighting Mr. Robles and Mr. Dorsey for the test? I mean, that's pretty incredible, huh?
Well, I didn't fight Mr. Dorsey. It was Mr. Robles. I actually, that was only the fourth time ever I worked out and fought Grandmaster Robles. And at Algarza School, I went down there in like 2009 just to work out. And I got to work out with Master Robles and knew right away that full contact power is there in the ring. And he asked me to be his sparring partner in his eighth degree test in June of 2010 underneath the AKBBA board and Alan Steen. And then we talked again last year, and he said, "You want to do it again?" I said, "Are you up for it?" I said, "Absolutely. Give me something to work out for."
Well, you know, this
that was
is
September of last year.
You know, this is the second time that the Sport Card Museum got to test Mr. Robles. We test him back probably about 5-6 years ago, maybe back, well, further than that, I'm sure. It was like for his seventh or something. And it was a long time ago. So I'm really glad that he's part of the journey of the museum. And I got to be a part of that and watch you guys do that. But, you know, let's go back to your career again. I want to go back to Joe Gillum. I know that you've had some really classic fights with some really classic people. Like you mentioned, Mr. Blackies, Mr. Hill. Of course, our dear friend that we lost last year, Mr. Mackin. Who were some of your favorite fighters you had to fight, and who were some of your toughest fighters that you had to fight here in Texas?
Well, you know, Chuck Timmons was one that was you'd watch, and anybody who would watch Chuck Timmons go, "I can beat that guy." You know,
right.
But when you step in the ring with him, it's just a totally different story. Chuck was a very crafty, smart fighter. I lost to him 2 or 3 times before I finally beat him at for Grand Championship up in Rick Arnold's tournament in Denton, Texas. And, you know, then we went back and forth a lot.
Did Chuck like that when you beat him? Did he take it real graciously?
No. Chuck never liked it. Chuck always – here's what Chuck called me. Chuck calls me. He got a nickname for me. He goes, "What's up, white boy?" But I know he loves me. So, you know, it's like I was giving him fits. There were other fighters, you know, that were just really good fighters. Carl Whitaker was one. You know, I lost to him for Grand Championship at the Bruce Lee Scholarship. The following year, I beat him and then beat him again at the USKC. Willie Holland, when I would fight heavyweight sometimes, always a tough fighter.
Yeah.
Guy Metzger, I fought a couple of times. I fought him at the USKC, won that one. That was in 1990. I had like five fights in a row.
You beat a UFC champion. That's Mr. Metzger's
yeah,
UFC champion.
That's before he, you know, started doing the UFC stuff. He's about 165 pounds, man.
Can I tell you a story real quick? I was sitting in the office with, I think it was Mr. Robles and Mr. Kirby called. And he called, he said, "Look, Mr. Robles, I'm not going to be able to defend my title this year, but I'm gonna send one of my black belts. He's an up-and-comer." And Mr. Robles said, "Okay, sure." And you know who he sent? Guy Metzger. And Guy
beat
everybody that year. Yeah, he did. He beat everybody that year. Guy was had a tremendous spin-back, jump spin-back kick. He had that jump spin-back kick. He was really strong.
Yeah, never got me with it, but I was closing on too quick. Tim Kirby always had good fighters. Guy Metzger and Steve Sosa. Steve Sosa was the prettiest technician I've ever seen. Straightforward, straight, straight line fighter, hard hitter. There was a lot of tough ones. Chico, I never fought. I never fought Chico.
Oh, you never did?
He was a little bit before my time. But, of course, the hardest hitting one was always Rooster. It was like, I'd fight everybody, but I never enjoyed fighting Rooster because you always walked away with a bloody lip, bloody nose. Something's going to be hurting, But Rooster, I had some pretty good fights. Greg Dorsey, guy of Beaumont, was a very, extremely hard hitter. One of Fred Simon's guy. Greg could hit hard, man. He could bang.
He was a black dragon. He was called something dragon. I forgot what it was.
Munez, one of Steve Powell's guys. Rick Arnold, good fighter. Yeah. Pete Ramirez, to me, just an amazing fighter down in Brownsville. The guy had legs on him, could hit you with everything, all these guys I fought, it was a lot of fun fighting them. Except Amazeya Dominique and Anthony Linson out of Grasshopper out of San Antonio. Good fighters,
Yeah.
I fought a lot. Sir?
He was under Arnold Zip White, Anthony Linson.
Yep. That's right. I mean, there's a lot of good fighters, and of course, the old timers, I fought a few of them here and there, Al Garza, Larry Lockhart.
Joe, what made you different, though, when the pressure was on, not just winning first place, but because I know you fought in a lot of grand, and you won a few, you lost a few, but what made you different to be able to fight all those great fighters and be consistently winners, too? I mean, because you won a lot of grands, I know. What was your secret?
Everybody I named there probably started out karate as a kid. I was an adult when I started. I got married real young, raised in a family. And so, they had a huge advantage on me starting out. But what made me is I always tapped into athletic ability. I was very fast. I could run the 40-yard dash pretty quick, and I used that to my advantage, my speed. I wasn't the prettiest fighter, but I'm coming. And if it's a straight line fighter, I'm usually going to get you most of the time because straight line was my style of fighting. Angle fighters and all the people move around these days, I have a tougher time with them because I'm older too. But, I remember fighting Charlie Davidson in the semifinals at a grand championship in Austin, Texas one time. I asked Debbie Vines, I said, what kind of fighters? And he's coming right at you. I said, good. I beat Charlie 6-1, and he was shocked. I was 37 years old. He was like 21, it was a lot of fun. Straight line fighters, I enjoy fighting. I'm a good straight line fighter.
Another thing too about Joe Gillum that I've always enjoyed about you was that you are a straight line fighter and that you're really no nonsense. And that goes to my next question. Someone had to teach you that patented reverse punch you have. I mean, it's really pretty focused.
Well, the reverse
fast.
Punch. I throw it real different. I don't roll my hand over. I throw it like a vertical punch. Number one, it's safer on your wrist, and you can pop it in there real quick. And
straight line. Okay, cool.
Yeah, that's right. And it's total commitment. To me, it's just about total commitment. If you're gonna throw something, just don't throw it out there. Throw it with an intent to hit. And I remember when I fought Rich Dixon one time, I hit him with that reverse punch. Richard was a lot bigger than me. He was like 50 pounds more weight than me. I hit him so hard, he told me he couldn't breathe for the rest of the fight. He goes, I've never been hit that hard before. I said, I did it out of fear more than anything. But, you got to go with these guys. I mean, I was knocked out six times, had my nose broken twice. And
you know what's fun talking to you? I mean, it really is. I thought about this before I got on the air. You mentioned Chuck Timmons, you mentioned Richard Dixon, rest in peace, you mentioned Rooster. These are all the guys, I mean, especially Richard and Chuck. I mean, I had wars with these guys, Greg Dorsey. And I wasn't that far before you. I mean, I was fighting, I guess, NASCAR and NBL when you were really light and heavy in AOK. But in the early AOK years, from 79 to, I guess, 86 to 88, man, I had wars with those guys, and those guys could fight hard. And back then, also, you were also part of the group of fighters that there wasn't two or three people in your division that would line up. There'd be, 10, sometimes 15 people, and you'd have to fight three or four fights before you'd even get to a third or second place, even a chance for first. That's the next question I want to ask you. You've seen a lot what's going on in karate terms today. You've seen fighters are sort of spoiled a little bit because they don't fight as much or near as much as what we did. How do you feel about that? Do you think a fighter is – I mean, the fighters are good, and they're great today. They do things, amazing things that we couldn't do. But are they spoiled? Do they don't get to fight enough before they win a championship? I mean, that's the question I wanted to ask someone like you. And to work their way up to win a grand, you know?
I think it depends on what turn it was. I fought, you know, the AOK State Championship in 2009. I had to fight seven fights before I got to the finals that night. Seven, I was the lowest seed. And so, I mean, you know, that's a hard question right there because to me, I watch the fighters these days and I'm just like, wow, you know, they're just amazing. And as far as stamina, they can go. You know, the people that are fighting at the world champion level these days are in great shape. You know, the young men that I work out with when I'm working out, Chad Cannon, Chance Turner, Peter and Jason Chartuni, those guys will click. And if they got to turn it on, if they got to thump you, they'll thump you. If they got to fight five or six, seven, eight fights, they can do it. So it's hard for me to sit there and – I know what you're saying, but, I mean, it's all a matter of, I think, you know – you give and go. I mean, I've seen some of those world champions fighting sport karate right now. I don't know if they're spoiled, but, you know, to me, they're in just great shape. And, you know, I guess some of them are fighting two or three fights. But, I've fought two or three fights in tournaments. Go ahead.
I'm sorry.
No, I've fought tournaments where I fought two or three fights, and I'm fighting, you know, like a weight, fighting other weight divisions or age divisions to get the grand championship. So usually four or five fights, but I fought a few of them where there are eight, nine fights, you know, I had to have, you know, but I liked it. But to me, it was, I just enjoyed it. I love fighting.
I think the record is Ken Firestone. He had in Las Vegas, I saw him fight 17 fights for first place.
Oh, I never had to fight that many.
I think Johnny Gyro did a number one time too. He did like 11 fights. So that's a lot of fights. I mean, absolutely is. I got to ask you another question too, because it falls in the line of winning grands, because to me, guys like yourself that were always, you know, pretty much won their division and always had a shot at the grand, and even though you didn't really get, you maybe got a little check or something, but still with the prestigious, they always said that if you won the grands, you're the best guy at the tournament in fighting per se. So here's my question for you. I know that today's avenue for the difference between women and men is different, but I'm going to ask you a question. If you won a grand championship and the promoter gave you, say, $300, beautiful trophy, $300, and then the woman won the grand championship on the same stage, same grand championship, except it's a woman, got a beautiful trophy but got only $100, how would you feel about that? And the reason why I ask that is because this is the year of the women. We're honoring the women this year with the Women's Symposium and doing Mikey Rowe Moore and Great Fighter and a lot of issues about the women, and I know that you fought a lot. How do you feel about that, though, as far as women's rights, as far as sport karate?
Well, I think back in the day, you know, when they gave less money and stuff, there weren't that many women in the divisions,
they've done that recently. I've seen it happen 6 months ago.
Oh, really? Well, I mean, I don't know. That's a hard question. I mean, you know, it's kind of like, I mean, do women make more in golf? Do women make more in golf or tennis or anything else that they do? I don't think so. So I think it's always there, but, you know, women are coming up and making more money all the way across the board, you know, in everything that they do.
But, Joe, I'm going to ask you a question. The women, they pay the same entry fee, the same hotel expenses, the same airfare, the same food at the same restaurants. They have to pay the same spectator fee for the mother and father to come in and watch them. Why would a producer, whoever the producer decided to do this, go on the fact of saying, well, I'm going to charge you $200 because you're a woman? It just doesn't make sense to me. And if someone like yourself, would it bother you? That's one question. Would it bother you?
Would it bother me if women got paid the same?
No. It bothered you that he got less. That's what I'm saying. In front of you. The guy gives you $300
to get there. That's something I didn't put any thought to. No, I think it would bother me because, yeah, I think the women, there's some women fighter I see these days. I don't want to fight. Back then, I see Linda Tilly fight. I don't want to fight her. I know Rick Arnold told me one time went to work out with her. He said, don't ever do that. So, yeah, I would say, I mean, you know, it's a. Yeah, it would bother me because I think women should make as much
money. Some of the toughest women fighters you've ever seen in Texas, say. Who are some of the toughest women fighters you've seen in Texas?
Chris Minshew, Linda Denley. One person people forget is a student I had named Michelle Burgess, and she was always in the mix, always fighting, you know, in the finals.
Okay.
For first and second, fought Linda Denley many times. Never beat her, but it was close a few times. But, I mean, you know, it was you know, the Ramirez girls, Ava and Ada, they were always really fun to watch, you know. And then, golly, I have to go think about it now. There's Susan Sargent was one that was a good fighter. I can't remember her being real consistent.
How about Christy Shawley and Amy Seelan?
Oh, yeah, all those girls. Of course, Danielle Dixon.
Yeah.
Those kids came up. Man, they were tough.
Yeah,
yeah,
Sierra,
a lot of these. Regina.
Yeah.
Regina's awesome. Amazing,
yeah,
man.
You can go on.
You know,
that's
so
amazing. Yeah, I love it. I love it. Now, let me ask you another question. Who's the toughest woman that you've ever sparred?
Huh.
Yeah, I'm asking all these tough questions to my friend. I'm sorry, Jeff.
I've sparred quite a few women, but I had some students that were pretty tough. But, you know, one time when we were working out with at Al Garza's school, his daughter.
Real quick.
Al Garza's daughter. Yeah, she was.
Yeah.
She never backed down. She could fight, man. I was always impressed the way she fought. And stuff.
I always hate getting by those pretty women. You know, the girls are real pretty.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, you know, but I've sparred a few of them here and there. I never got to work out with Linda Denley. I'm sure that'd be a whirlwind.
Yeah, Linda was fun to fight. Hey, were you on any teams in your career?
Oh, yeah. I was on quite a few teams.
Okay.
Me and.
Tell me about it.
It was me, Chuck, and Calvin fought at Hurricane Nationals.
Okay.
One there, Calvin Cross, another amazing fighter. Rooster Dietra.
Was that before N8EZ? Was that before N8EZ, their team of Calvin and Ant and Chuck?
No, actually, I was a fill-in. Somebody couldn't do it, and I fought on an N8EZ team.
Oh,
I fought
okay.
with them. Yeah, I fought with them. And
were you a firefighter, too? Did you get on the firefighters,
sir?
Too? Were you on the firefighter team, too?
No.
Okay.
No, sir. No, sir. It was me, Rooster, and Dietra fought It Ain't Easy there. Chuck, Pete, and Rooster and myself fought a Mexico team a couple times at Cardi Olympics. We fought them in Austin at Jose Santa Maria's tournament, the Masters. There were a lot of teams. Myself, David Henson, and I can't remember the third fighter, beat It Ain't Easy team one time. So, you know, there were some teams I fought on. There were a lot of good fighters.
You know, Dave's in Florida now as a sheriff. Did you know that?
Yeah, I did. I saw that on Facebook. Dave was getting ready to fight Dietra that day, and he told me, he goes, I never beat Dietra. I said, you need to fight him. Today's your day. Now you're going to beat him. And he beat Dietra that day. Dietra's an amazing fighter. I mean, you know. Yeah.
Yes, he is. You know, I love talking about all those Texas guys. You know, like you said, most of them have grown up as kids, and they've turned out to be great adults and great karate instructors. You know, we're very lucky.
Yeah, like Chad Cannon. Chad Cannon teaches two of my grandsons.
Oh.
And I love to see that full circle because I taught his instructor, Bubba Dyke. And, you know, Bubba would tell me about Chad. I come watch Chad and stuff, and get that full circle feeling, and Chad's an amazing instructor, an amazing person. You know, it's really nice to see that.
Got me started in the announcing business. Remember, his dad had a television.
Yeah,
that's camera.
Right.
And he put me on the air back before I created Black Belt TV with Metrodome. That's a true story. Mr. Cannon put me on the air way before Black Belt TV, and I owe him. I always do. I really appreciate him. And I remember watching Chad grow up, you know, literally grow up. He turned out to be such a great fighter. I used to love to watch him and Garrett fight. Him and Garrett would have some great wars. And but let's talk about, now that we talk a little bit about your career and everything, I want to talk about the management a little bit. You're part of a group called the Amateur Organization of Karate, which has gone through so many changes and going through some changes that you'll hear later on tonight when I talk about it. But what was your part with the AOK, and what years was that when you was involved with the management?
It was 1990 through 1994. I became the secretary of the AOK, and it was myself, Ishmael Robles, Al Garza, Chuck Timmons, and Bob Beasley. And what a wonderful group of people to work with.
Yeah.
All very intelligent and very just incredible men. But a lot of changes went on then. We were changing weight divisions. We were moving things around as far as NBL and NASCA were coming in then. And,
You had your first NASCA tournament too in 1992 with Al Garza, if you were in there that year. Yes, you did. And that was pretty
historic.
I did too. We all competed in it.
Yeah, that was a good tournament. A lot of NBL. We regionalized the state, got it to, you know, because when I was a fighter of the year in AOK in 1990. I had to fight in 25 or 26 tournaments out of the 31 or 30 that were on the schedule to get that. You had to fight in every region. I mean, it was your total points, and that just became hard, you know, to fight in. You're literally half the year you're spending at karate tournaments, which was, I loved it. But as far as we got to regionalize and then have the state tournament, which I thought was just an awesome idea, you know, that we got to be part of that.
Did you ever win the Greek?
No, I never did win the Greek. I won a kata guy. I was a fighter. I was always impressed with people who put that much effort into it. And that time into it, you know, do kata and fighting and stuff. But no, I never did win the Greek.
Well, you know, you probably already heard that I've been asked to put something together for the 40th anniversary for the AOK. And I thought about it and I prayed about it. You know, I gave it to the Lord, and he came up and he said, Gary, you know, it took you first 7 years, you lost the Golden Greek by 2 or 3 points. And then it took you 17 years to actually earn it. Why don't you put together a Golden Greek reunion? So I got together with the board, the new board of directors, and they've approved it. So December the 14th and 15th, we're going to actually have the Golden Greek reunion from 1981 to 2017. And we're going to have some really cool things. Mr. Ishmael Robles, our dear friend, is the guest speaker. And he's going to be talking about why the Golden Greek is the most important award in Texas sport karate. And then we're going to do some fun things. You're going to love this. I'm excited about introducing this. We're going to have a vote from all the producers, past producers, and people like yourself to vote for the person who was the best Golden Greek winner kicker, the best Golden Greek winner puncher, and the best Golden Greek person that was the most exciting to watch. And we've already got votes in for that. But here's the fun part. This is going to be great. We're going to put everybody's name in a fishbowl Friday night. Put their years that they want it. Going to draw names, and the two people with the best stories chosen by the directors, they're going to get up Saturday night right before Ish is talking about the Greek, and they're going to tell their story about their favorite Golden Greek story. And we're going to have a red carpet walk of fame that I'm going to do for everybody who's won the Golden Greek to walk across that red carpet, and got some special prizes for or gifts for the Golden Greek winners. And it's really going to be a lot of fun, because a lot of those kids that wanted to go to Greek back in our day are now adults. And it's going to be fun to see them, you know, and bringing people together like I do, you know, with the gathering I do in September. But this will be December 14th and 15th. And, man, you got to be there, Joe, because, man, you're part of that Texas history. And I can't wait to hear what your issue is going to say, the stories he'll talk about and the history that he's got. Now, how much do you know about Demetrius Savannah? Just what people told you, or did you actually meet him?
No, I think I was at a tournament. I seem to remember being in New Braunfels, Texas, somewhere in that area, Fredericksburg, before he passed away. I believe he was at a tournament there. No, I didn't. I came up. I think he passed away in 81, and okay. That's when I started the martial arts. So, of course, I heard about him, you know, and I fought enough of his proteges to know, you know, where those, you know, that stable that he had and the people that came down from that line there, just amazing fighters coming out of Dallas. You know, it was just crazy.
Do you know who won the first Golden Creek awards? You know who they were? You know,
Tim Kirby, Rooster Mackin, Annette Benavidez, and
Cynthia.
Well, Jim, those three.
Yeah, and her sister. Cynthia Benavidez, Annette Benavidez, Rooster Mackin, and Mr. Kirby. Absolutely.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Yeah. You know, I've already got a couple of calls from a couple of people saying, well, you know, before 1990, there wasn't regions. Everybody had to go to all the tournaments across Texas just to earn the degree. That's what was so tough. And then they invented the senior division, which is 32 and up, and they allowed a senior Greek to be awarded. So it's changed through the years, but still is the most important award, I believe, in Texas. Because
yeah,
the AOK has lasted throughout all, it lasted through SOC, TNT, MBL, USKF, all the Taekwondo groups, all the other little groups, the League, SMART, all these different groups. AOK is still the strongest group in Texas. Not one, but
it's a great organization. You know, I won Instructor of the Year 5 years in a row when I was there.
Really?
I was always like one, two, or three. And, you know, as far as fighting stuff, when I went to become Fighter of the Year in 1990, my inspiration was Chuck Timmons because he had a jacket that had, like, you know, Fighter of the Year 85, 86, 87, 88, 89. I wanted to spoil that little run there. And I edged him out by about 18 points. But it was tough. I mean, you know, and I can't imagine, you know, I'd watch people who won the Greek during that time was Al Garza, Bryce Anthony. You know, those guys were winning it during that time and traveling every weekend, you know, in and out.
It was tough. It was tough.
Just being around. Yeah. Just being around those people was amazing. You know,
well, you know,
and the friendships that I gained from that.
I share this with you. I you know, I've been very lucky, but that first year, which the AOK was invented, like 79, 80, they had their very first top 10 awards in Texas. And I was ranked ninth in fighting. And to me, that besides the Hall of Fame and the Go to Greek Award, that is really the most prized moment, just being that group with all those incredible fighters from 1980. Amazing times in Texas, and you're a part of that. Now, I want to ask you one more question before I take my break. You do something now. You teach now, right? Correct?
Well, I don't teach so much. I go work out, but I do, you know, give advice when I can. I mean, you know, to the anybody who will listen to me.
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
I talk to a lot of people. I talk to, you know, Chad and Peter Terlini and those guys, and they really look up to you. Chance Turner, those guys, they think that you're a mentor. That's pretty cool to have those guys look up to you, huh?
I think it's cool. I try to give them, you know, good advice, you know, what I've learned over the years and try to go forward with that. And they're just a great group of kids, you know. I say kids. They're all, you know, almost 30 years old now, but they're just amazing people.
Scary, isn't it? When I called Annette the other day, Mr. Joe, she told me, I was talking to I still think of those as the children. And she goes, Mr. Lee, I'm turning 50 years old this year. I said, no, what? I was on her 12 years old when she tested for black. That's they grow up fast. They really do. Hey, look, I'm going to take a little break here and do some commercials. And then I'm going to come back and we're going to play the Legends Name Game with some of your favorite people that you've been impressed with and have helped you throughout your years. And some people that maybe just you're impressed with, okay?
Sounds great.
Super, Joe. I'll be right back, okay? God bless you.
All right, sir.
Hey, guys.
See you then.
We're with Mr. Gillum, Joe Gillum, from the Texas AOK Lineage and History. What a great interview, and talking to an old friend and knowing that the fighters that he fought were just incredible people. I mean, he definitely falls in that category. You know, he's a history general. And also, I didn't get to mention it, but Mr. Gillum actually won last year, the Joe Louis Memorial Dragon Women's Fighting Award, with Roy Kervin and Alan Kelly. Just pretty cool dude, Joe Gillen. So we're going to be coming back with him in a minute and do the legends. I've got a couple shout-outs to do. The first one is my tournament shout-out, and it deals with my dear friends in Dallas, Texas, and Mr. Wes Melton, Mr. Whit Melton, and Stephanie Melton, and their leader, their dad, Mr. Steve Melton, will be on the radio show here pretty soon. But they're having a tournament May the 12th in Dallas, Texas, and it's going to be at the famous Gillies. That's right. Gillies is known as a nightclub, but it's a huge facility. It's very nice, very classy, and they're planning their tournament to be May the 12th. And the rumor is that the Sport Karate Museum is going to be there with a beautiful booth, and just going to have a really fun time. So if you're in the Dallas area May 12th, please check out the Long Star Eagle Karate Tournament. That will be done at Gillies. And if, for more information, you can call them personally, Mr. Melton or Wed or West, at 214-223-4913. That's 214-223-4914. And that's our tournament shout-out. Now, our school shout-out this week is a great friend of the Sport Karate Museum and also someone who won the Joe Louis Dragon Image Memorial Award a few years back. We're talking about Mr. Wade Kirkpatrick from Full Sheer Karate. Our shout-out this year goes to tonight's show goes out to his Full Sheer Karate studio, where he's building champions twice a week. He's been there for quite a few years. Now, Mr. Kirkpatrick is best known as an NBL world champion. He's also won the Golden Greek in 1997. He'll be at the Golden Greek reunion. So if you're in the Full Sheer area, which is Full Sheer, Texas, in the outskirts of Houston near Katy, please give him a call at 832-275-3900. And that's our school shout-out for this week. We've got something that's coming up that's really exciting, which we go to every year. It's a super show in Las Vegas at the Diageo this year. It's July the 3rd and the 4th and the 5th. And I apologize. It's July 1st, 2nd, and 3rd in Las Vegas, Nevada. And our booth will be there. Our special guests are Mr. Jim Buten, Mr. Jim Butcher. I think Mr. Jesse Bowman will be there. We're doing a live radio show. And we have all kinds of people that come to the radio show and also to the booth. Mr. Vinny Akitas, of course, Bill Wallace, Mr. Jeff Smith. I mean, they just come in floods to the booth. And normally we ask them to do autographs, and they're sitting there. So if you want to come by and say hello, and please stop by and see us at the Sport Karate Museum booth, July 1st through the 3rd at the Bellagio in Las Vegas, Texas. Then upcoming, this is exciting to me. You know, this is our third year that we've done Kata Wars. And if you're just coming onto the air, Kata Wars is a unique event that's invitational only for the pro division. It is an open tournament for everybody and very fun. We also introduced what we call Bubble Kumite. And but the pro division for Kata Wars is very unique. You have to have 100 first place wins under your belt as a black belt to be invited. And you're being judged by kata performers who have won 100 first places. Pretty unique. And last year, our grand champion was Mr. Johnny Murphy. A close runner-up was Mr. Dean Piles. It's literally an amazing, amazing competition. And it's a gathering. It's amazing. But we want to do something in fighting. So what people don't realize, I've got a tremendous core with the Sport Karate Museum. And so I asked 25 of the top fighters in America from 1960, 70, 80, 90, and the year 2000 to be my mentors on this and help me create rules for what we're bringing to the table this September the 28th and 29th at the Living Legends 26th and the Living Legends Roast of Mikey Romore. We're going to do the Black Belt Tag Team Point Fighting Battle of the Sexes, Jim Harrison's America's Challenge. That's right. Today, I officially got permission from Mr. Harrison to name the America's Challenge after his name. And it's pretty exciting what we're doing. We're handpicking 8 fighters through their resumes and 4 women fighters, 4 men fighters, forming 2 men teams and 2 women teams. The 2 men teams will fight each other. The 2 women teams will fight each other. And then automatically, from the very beginning, all 8 fighters will be going for a bonus with someone on the side counting their techniques, not their points, but how many techniques they throw. So if the woman or the man were competing against each other, not against each other, but for getting the most techniques, will win a bonus at the end of the match. The match would be 2 3-minute rounds. Then what's really fun is we've added a couple new rules. And I won't go into depth, but I will say one rule that it's really been fun introducing. And we call it the Howard Jackson rule. That rule is very simple. He was known as being the Blitzer, the father of the Blitz, if you knew who Howard Jackson was. We lost him a few years back. But before he left us, he left the legacy of closing that gap faster than anybody in the world. So with that said, at the Jim Harrison's American Challenge, the fighters will have an option to do something very simple. They'll get 1 point for every punch, 2 points for every kick. But with the Howard Jackson rule, if the judges see the fighter score 3 to 4 to 5 times before the center referee can stop it, the judges would award that fighter 3 points. Imagine, fighter's down by 3 points, can tie it up with the Howard Jackson rule. He can win the fight with 10 seconds left with the Howard Jackson rule by 1 point because of 1 point difference. Well, exciting times. Not wanting to change anything, just to add the excitement of what point karate is and was and what it can be and what it is today. We're so proud of all the fighters that are doing sport karate, and we're proud of everybody who's competing in the Olympics in 2020. So we're just adding excitement. So with that said, I'd like to come back to my special guest, the one and only Mr. Joe Gillum, and play the Legends Name Game. And before I introduce the Legends Name Game, make sure Joe's back on the air. Joe, are you there?
I am, sir.
What do you think about the about the Jim Harrison's American Challenge? Kind of exciting stuff. You're one of the mentors. Yeah.
Yeah, that's some good stuff coming up you got there. That's a lot of work you do. You do a lot of the work, Master Lee.
Well, you're one of the mentors for fighting for this. You know, I put together 25 fighters that are just who's in the circle of martial arts in America. But it's pretty impressive just looking at that list, knowing that I bug those guys daily on the phone and email just to get their perspective how I can make fighting better for the legends. And I appreciate your opinion. It really means a lot. Well, the Legends Name Game is really fun. We created this a few years back, actually 2 years ago when we created the radio show. And I throw a name at you, and 2 to 3 minutes, you get to talk about that person. And if the listeners are lucky, I know that person too, and I throw my 2 cents in. But I'm going to throw some names at you, Joe. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Okay, the first one I'm going to throw at you is Bubba Dyke. And for people who don't know who Bubba, we lost him a few years back, but he was an important part of what I'm doing, a kind of a dear friend, but he was very close to you. Tell me about Bubba.
Bubba was one of a kind. As a white belt, he'd ask me every day, Mr. Gillum, when am I going to be able to start sparring? I said, when you get your gold belt. He'd pop his white belt, pull it, and he'd tell me, you're just scared of me. And I'd go home at night and tell my wife about this little sawed-off run I just wanted to beat the crud out of. And he just had a mouth on him. I whooped him for about 25 or 30 minutes. I had about 20 or 25 minutes when he got his gold belt. And we were bowing out. He couldn't take it no more. As we were bowing out, he goes, you better stop. I was just getting warmed up. But I knew right then he was either going to be a friend or I'm going to have to kill him.
Yeah.
So, and Bubba being a really good friend, just a unique individual, could have been a stand-up comedian. He's got the quickest wit I've ever been around. And I could tell you stories and go on and on about Bubba Dyke. So, but
well,
really
I'll
a unique individual. We lost him in 2003, I believe is when he passed.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Him and Chad actually flew to Hawaii for my first MBL tournament. Yeah, he was a cool guy. And he was a good competitor. I really loved to watch him compete. Absolutely.
He's tough. He's a tough little fighter. So, yeah.
I'm going to throw another name at you, which is a group. And you mentioned some of them earlier, but I'm going to say the group because I've watched them from the very beginning, how they started, what they formed, and what they are today. And I'm going to say Team Gypsy. Talk about those boys. And Gil.
Well, I mean, when you talk about Team Gypsy, I think about Chad Chance and Chance Turner, Chad Cannon, and Jason Peter Tartuni. That was, to me, the original guys I started working out with. And
right.
What I loved about working out with them at my age, you know, being in my 40s again and started working out with them and training with them, was the power and speed that they had, but the this amazing control that they had. There are many times, you know, they could have popped me pretty hard, done this, done that, but it was always, you know, I fought Peter one time in the semifinals for a grand championship, and I fought Jason for a grand championship one time, and in my 40s. So it was great guys. I mean, just amazing people, you know, all four of them, just.
Well, I'm
right. If Chad wanted to teach my grandkids, either one of those kids could be teaching my kids, grandkids.
I got to throw in a plug for Gil, and I'm going to tell you the reason why. You know, I've never seen Gil do martial arts. I'm sure he's a martial artist. Coach, I love watching him work. I love watching
yeah,
Gil
he's
work.
Yeah, he's smooth.
He is. And he's just a great coach. I've watched him from the very beginning. And he's got vision, and he's taking Team Gypsy not only to have their own tournament now, take those guys on a national basis. Texas is on the map because of Team Gypsy and what they've done. Absolutely.
It's so true. You know, Gil, what the people don't know about Gil, I mean, he a lot of out of his own pocket, you know. He carried those
right.
kids out of his own pocket a lot of times. So, I mean, he's a unique individual, and he's smooth. He's
yeah.
good with those kids. Those kids love Gil.
Absolutely.
So he's a good guy. Yeah.
I haven't talked about it in a while, but, you know, to me, if I've got to vote as a Golden Greek winner on this contest, the most exciting guy to watch, the one to Golden Greek, hands down, the very first guy that won it as a man, I'm talking about Tim Kirby. Talk about Tim Kirby a little bit.
Great guy. I just got through talking to him a couple of weeks ago. I fought in three of Tim Kirby's he used to put on these matches all the time and stuff, have full contact.
Sure.
And yep.
Yeah.
I fought on all three of them and fought Steve Sosa first in Dallas, got booed, fought Steve for two rounds and beat Steve. That's how I got my fourth degree, because I did a lot of drop kicks and stuff, and Al Francis approached me and tested me for fourth degree after that. And then my second fight was with Rooster. I fought Rooster for three rounds. Who in the world in the right mind would fight Rooster for three straight rounds? I mean, the second round,
You're
he
crazy.
Dropped me. Oh, my God. But third round, I came on and ended up beating him, but Tim Kirby, I got to fight Tim Kirby one time. And it was the semifinals for a grand championship, and he beat me 10-9 in overtime. And I've got to work out with him a lot. He's just an amazing martial artist. I mean, beautiful technique.
I fought Tim one time. It was in Galveston, the ISIS tournament. And it was for first place, and he beat me 5-0. I say one more thing about Tim. Fort Worth Pro-Am, 1982. Fought Sam Montgomery the first round, beat Sam Montgomery in 15 seconds. Montgomery was the number one fighter out of California, and he's also the guy that Mr. Robles knocked out for one of his fights.
That's right.
That's how good Tim Kirby was. Amazing fighter. Amazing fighter.
Amazing.
Okay,
amazing kata guy.
Yes. He won. I think he won kata 21 times in a row.
21 times in a row, yep.
In a row, absolutely. I'm going to throw another guy at you. You haven't heard about him in a long time, but he was a good kid. And I didn't warn you about him, but I think you probably know him. Danny Burkhalter. Remember Danny?
Danny was my student.
No. See?
Yeah, I took Danny to black belt. I took Danny and his dad, and I believe his sister to black belt.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, no one remembers Danny Monk. I do. That's why I mentioned him. He was a great little fighter. He was belonged to you.
Yeah, he was a good straight line fighter. How do you think he learned how to fight?
That's funny. Well, good. And so you raised him from white to black, huh? Now, is he still
yes,
around
sir.
Rock?
Yes, sir.
Is he still around
no,
Rock?
No, I believe him and his wife live in Burnett, Texas.
Okay. Wow. Let me ask, did you ever see a guy named, and he's a friend of mine, I'm sure you do know him, but did you ever see a guy named Steve Doss fight?
I used to work out with Steve when I was younger, first coming up and stuff. I didn't like working out because he hurt me every time. But, yeah, Steve Doss, great guy. He's a full contact fighter, and he had a school here in Austin. at River City, and he used to have an inner school Roosters comeback fight after he blew his knee out in college. I was his first fight. that's one of my earlier fights. Yeah, Rooster beat me 3 times in a row before I finally beat him. It was always he would come back. I always had him down, but I was bleeding from the nose, ear, lip. And Steve Dahl said, it's not an AOK tournament. Can't disqualify him. I said, I'm not looking for it. I just want to fight him, you know. But it was yep. I remember Steve Dahl. Steve Dahl was a good guy. A very, very good martial artist. Just a wonderful human being.
Now, you fought as basically a middleweight, correct? 160, 170?
Yeah, he's full contact fighter. And so, yep.
Now, I'm talking about you. What was your weight when you fought?
Oh, well, actually, I weigh about 175, 174 in there. Yeah, I fought middleweight. You know, I go heavy sometimes before I got the rules changed because AOK, you didn't know what you're going to weigh from 1 week to the next. Some people wouldn't have scales, so I just go middleweight with no scales. Depends on who was there, too. I'd line up and, you know, and who I want to fight. You know, before we started the computer stuff, we'd line up a lot, and I'd be down one end and Rooster or Carl Whitaker or, you know, one of those guys would be down at the other end. I remember some people lining up to me and they end up moving when somebody find out who I was. But, you know, I always want to be right at the end.
Joe, people,
sir?
The young people, when you tell them, you know, because nowadays everyone does computers, everybody. But as you said,
right.
When you tell the young people that we used to line up and then crazy people, and I did this, I'd get next to someone. I'd stand maybe 15 seconds, and then I'd move. I'd go stand next to someone else, and then I'd do it again. Sometimes I'd move 3 times, and the person that was the most nervous that would say something, that's probably who I'd stay beside. And we could have strategy back then that most people wouldn't do. Some people would just line up, you know?
Yeah.
So they took that away when they added the computers and they added the weights and everything, but that's another subject. I do have to ask you a question, though. You mentioned Mr. McCallum earlier, and you went to all his seminars. Did you ever get to fight him in a tournament after you?
Yes, sir, I did.
Yes,
sir, I did.
Oh, that's cool.
I did.
Tell me what that was like.
It was Brian Duffy. I remember it well. It was Brian Duffy's last tournament he had here in Austin, and Raymond and Brian Duffy and the Duffys were very close, very good friends. And I remember he rode in all the way from his Harley, and I fought lightweight that day, well, because Raymond McCallum was in middleweight, and Zip White was the heavyweight. And I won lightweight, ended up fighting Raymond, and he scored the first 2 points, I scored the second two, and he stepped back and looked at me, kind of nodded his head, like, good kick, and then he ended up beating me 6-2. but the fight between him and Zip was really good, too, after that. But it was always fun watching Ray McCallum fight. And the seminars, you know, I went to like 9 seminars here. It was about the 6th or 7th seminar where he finally set in on what he was talking about. And my whole fight changed after that. I started fighting differently after that.
Really?
And became a better fighter. I was always a good fighter. I was always a mix of things, you know, because of my athletic ability, my speed and everything. But I remember it was 89 or 90 that things started changing for me. And at the United States Karate Championships, I fought 4 or 5 tournaments in a row. Sir?
What did you do that changed you?
It was timing, gap, footwork, everything. It wasn't just, you know, going out there and get after it. You know, it was a lot about the gap and the timing and the way he always promoted a book called The Book of 5 Rings, too, that would – read about, about his fighting skill. And that's who Raymond patterned himself after, it seemed like, a lot, because a lot of things he would talk about how he fought and stuff was like that, you know?
That's a Ronin samurai. Miyamoto Musashi was a Ronin samurai, you know, someone that broke away from the clan.
Yep.
And that's, you know, I'll say this about Mr. Callan. I love talking about him. I did a poll a few years back, you know, because I've been in the museum now 20 years, but a few years back I did a poll. And there was 2 names that was on everybody's poll, and I did a poll over 200 fighters, and there was 2 names on everybody's top 5 poll, everybody's, and that was Keith Vitale and Ray McCallum.
Oh, I can't imagine. I've seen a lot of those guys fight, you know, back in the early 80s. Biggest compliment I was ever paid by Annette Benavides. She came to me one time. She goes, I don't know if you fight like Ray McCallum, Tim Kirby, or Rooster McIntyre. Those were the three people I always watched. And huge compliment, you know. And after winning USKC in 1990, George Minshew and Fred Simon, I can't remember the head judge's name, Mickey Fisher came up. They said, we hadn't seen a fight like that since Ray McCallum days. I had 3 points scored on me in like five fights. And it was a huge compliment. Of course, you know, after my head went down, it's like I realized I'm no Ray McCallum. Never will be. You know, he was amazing. I learned so much from him. So much.
Getting that from a great fighter like, you know, Annette or anybody like that. Because like I said, Joe, I mean, honestly, I want to say this publicly. I've watched you, and I've been a big fan. You're a great fighter, and I love having you on the show and talking about this. You know, I got to ask one more guy that we both have a real deep history with, as you know. But I got to ask you about your relationship, George Minshew. I mean, did you enjoy the roast last year?
I love that guy. He's one of the I can hang out with George forever. He's just a wonderful person. I remember at the 1992 Super Grands, I'm standing there watching lightweights fight, and you guys are stomping each other in the stomach and doing all sorts of crazy stuff. And he came and said, Joe, you look like you just seen a ghost. I said, I think I did, man. These dudes are bad, man. These guys are good. He goes, and he gave me this pep talk. He goes, you're Joe Gillum, da 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 da. And he got a coach's pass, and he stayed there and coached me the whole thing, and I ended up getting third, losing to Jerry Fontanez after I fought about five or six fights, you know. And but it was great. I mean, you know, he gave me a pep talk, and, you know, just been my friend ever since then. So, anyway, George is a great guy.
He's my life and has been instrumental from day one with the Sport Karate Museum. But the neat thing about Mr. Minshew, when you think about it, look at all the great people that he's coached. Going back to Travis Evans, Chris Minshew, to his daughters, Sid and Stoney.
Yeah. I
mean, April Cunningham, even though, you know, she was under Mr. Burleson, she trained by George too. I mean, there's a lot of women that Mr. Minshew is really taking. I mean, Jane Ritchie, you'll probably don't remember her. Barbara Hightower, not Barbara, but Melissa Hightower. This goes on and on and on. I mean, so George is one of those incredible people that if you got to know him and got the pleasure of being his friend, you know, greatness hopefully rubs off on you. And I've been lucky enough to be around him and people like you too. So, hey, listen, I got to ask you a question. This year you got put into the Joe Louis Memorial Dragon Image Fighting Award Elite Alumni with people like Mr. Harrison and Mr. Kervin and Ishmael Robles. And what is that like, being honored by getting an award by one of the greatest fighters that we've ever had in dual karate, Mr. Joe Louis?
It was amazing. I mean, because I got a picture with Joe Louis at the Bruce Lee Scholarship Tournament in like 1987 or 88, and after I won Grand Championship there.
You were a pretty boy back then, too, by the way. You were a pretty boy. Huh? I got that picture. You're a pretty boy.
It was an amazing deal because be with those type of people and stuff. I got a picture taken with me and Master Robles and Master Roy Kirby and stuff. You know, it goes right up there when I tested underneath in 2012 for my seventh degree and from under Alan Steen in the AKBBA board with Phil Wildman and Rooster and Eric Loveless and Carl Whitaker and David Vines. I mean, that was just a great feeling too. As you get older, these little things happen. You know, and also, you know, any type of Hall of Fame. I turned down like four or five Hall of Fame nominations, but I just didn't have time for them a lot, you know. But it's when you do stuff like that, it just means a lot because, you know, the accolades when you were younger was quite winning this or that. But
We're not a Hall of Fame. We're an alumni of guys that created football.
Right.
And that's what's cool about it, you know. But here's one I want to ask you, too, and I think this is kind of important. You know, You're 58 now, or 57?
58.
And you're to me, that's young because, you know, I'm going into the mid-60s. But what's it like knowing that the sport karate is going to be alive and kept in everybody's face as long as we can through the museum and being a part of that. That's really kind of the question I want to ask you. How important is he? And one more thing, kind of along that line of question, Joe. It's like you had a picture taken with Mr. Lewis back in the day, but then last year you got to be honored with the Joe Lewis Dragon Image Award. How cool is that? I'll take my listeners and telling them how cool that was to be able to go back in time and do. I mean, to me, I thought that was cool. You know, I really did.
It was a great time. It's the last time I actually got to see Rooster. My son came down with his wife, and just to be part of that was, and I can't tell you how much I appreciate that and what that did for me.
Did you get to get friends with some of the legends you never met before, like James Miller or, you know, Mikey Rowe Moore or any of those people?
I met a lot of different people, but it was just so many old friends there. You almost don't have time to meet a lot of new people, you know, and you just – just spending time with the old friends and stuff.
Joe. I can only do it once a year, bro. You know?
right.
Yeah.
But part of that test, you know, and also, you know, all that was just amazing, you know?
And speaking of that, did you ever get your DVD of it? Did you watch it? That Mr. Kelly made a movie out of? Did you get that?
Yeah, I saw that. Yeah.
Good. And let me plug that real quick. For anybody who would like to get the 25th Living Legends roast and Mr. Robles' 9-3 black belt test and Mr. Dorsey's 9-3 black belt test and the last time publicly that Mr. Rooster Mackin sparred and golly bum, Mr. Kerbin's speech, Mr. Minshew's speech, the awards, all the cool stuff. It's the actual movie, and you can contact kikbass.ak@gmail.com, and that's Mr. Alan Kelly, and he'd love to send you a copy. So, and it supports the Sport Crowder Museum. Well, Joe, I got to say thank you for tonight. It's been very informative.
Thank you.
I love getting a guy on here that I know that is not just a fighter. I love talking just a fighter. I mean, you know me. I'm a kata fanatic, a weapons fanatic. Whatever, breaking fanatic, but my heart is in fighting. That's why I'm so excited about introducing Jim Harrison's America's Challenge this year. And, you know, it was really fun today. I'll kind of end it with this. I called Mr. Harrison today, and I said, Mr. Harrison, this is what I'm doing. And he said, well, blank you, blank, 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 Gary Lee. Why didn't you invite me? I said, well, you are invited, sir. And he said, blank you, blank, blank, Gary. What if I put my gi on and get out there and make a challenge? I said, well, Mr. Harrison, how old are you now? He says, well, I'm blankety blank, 81 years old. And I said, well, you're not too old, and you're certainly not too young. What would you like? He said, I'll tell you what, I think I'd like to. So he wants me to advertise. He's going to show up to fight. I said it for the last show. Yeah. But the only problem is he's never put on equipment, ever. Only one time when he fought Victor Moore, he had 8-ounce gloves on. So might be a problem him putting foot gear on.
He wants to come out
of retirement and fight in this America's Challenge. And I said, you know, Mr. Harrison, what if I just name the America's Challenge after your name? Would you give me permission to do that? He says, blankety blank blank. Let me think about it. And then finally calls me back and he says, Gary, I will be honored if you name it Jim Harrison's America's Challenge. So officially, as of tonight on the radio show, ladies and gentlemen, listeners, Joe Gillum and everybody that's on the air, Jim Harrison's America's Challenge will be September the 29th at the Mikey Will Moore Celebrity Roast for the Showtime that night. What an interesting adventure, huh? So...
Awesome. That's great.
Joe. And,
God bless you, brother.
Thank you. And for everybody who's listening tonight, we're excited. We're going to have Mr. Don DeVries, and he is the producer of the Bill Wallace World Championship that's in Cleveland this year. And this is his third year running with the Sport Crowder Museum being a part of it. So Mr. Don DeVries, and hopefully, you know, Mr. Wallace will call in and say hello. We're not going to promise, but we certainly is invited, and we'll be talking about him. We'll be talking about his tournament, about the great event at the amusement park this year in Cleveland. And so that'll be our next show next Tuesday. On behalf of the AMMA Masters Radio Program and the Who's Who of Martial Arts, and, of course, the Sport Karate Museum, please tune in to us next Tuesday. We'll see you. And thank you again, Mr. Gillum. God bless you, everybody. Mahalo. Aloha.
Adios.
Adios.